right, welcome to the Musicians Insider. I'm Cronus. This is another episode. This week, we've got Sherry Chung, an amazing musician, composer, person in the movie industry who's going to tell us all about her. But I was looking at your history, and I see that not only are you here to talk to me about Gremlins, which I'm very excited about, but you've done stuff, the Nancy Drew, Hidden Staircase, and Riverdale. You worked on Riverdale season three now? I watched the first few of those, and it was weird when Luke Perry passed away. That was rough. And I haven't gone back to it since then, so I didn't know they were doing it season three. So I'd like to hear all about that stuff. And then there's a red line. And so why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? This is the Musicians Insider. And what I usually do is I like to hear how you've gotten, where you've gotten, and maybe some advice for my listeners, and just tell us a little bit about yourself and what's going on with Sherry.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks so much for having me, Aaron. I know Musicians Insider, and I love it. So I'm just like super happy to be here and join the ranks of the honored interviewees. Yeah.
Your guests.
Quick correction though, Riverdale is now going into its seventh and final season.
And the update I read was old.
Yeah, probably. So yeah. I guess clearly several years old, 4 years old. So I, as you've already mentioned, I write for TV and film, write music for TV and film. And those are all the great, some of the great projects that I've done. I guess if we start with how I got started.
Tell me your story. We've got half an hour or so, maybe a bit longer, however long we want.
Yeah.
So tell me your story. How did you get to where you are?
Yeah. Okay. So I was definitely one of those kids. I always say this. I was one of those kids where I wanted to do music. I wanted to do piano. I was classically trained since age five because I wanted to do that. Then I saw this movie, a little movie called Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves with Kevin Costner, and this just incredible score by Michael Kamen. And I had grown up in music, I was studying music, but I had never heard music like that. And of course I'd seen movies before, but nothing had really moved me until that. I was like, what is that wizardry? I wanna do that. And I was maybe 12, 13, something around there. And my parents are like, well, that's nice, Sherry. And again, what do you do at 12 or 13?
Where were you at this time? What part of the country were you in, or what kind of
climate? I was born and raised in, I was born in New York, but I was raised all over like the Northeast coast of the States. So Maine, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, a little bit of New York.
I thought Maine as soon as you said that. I thought Maine.
Yeah. There you go. And so, you know, again, nowhere near LA. I mean, nowhere near Los Angeles, nowhere near where at the time people are making, you know, movies and TV shows and stuff like that. So, it seemed as far fetched as, you know, wanting to be an astronaut. You know, it just, I might as well have just chosen just anything that would be really, really difficult, like kind of a really fine needle to thread, you know? And again, at that time there wasn't, hate to be like, you know, back in my day, but it's true that the internet wasn't then what it is now. You know, there was no way to just jump on and Google search or YouTube videos or anything like that. It was just, well, I'm going to continue to study music, and then I'm going to learn about schools where I can learn composition and theory, which is the route that I did end up going. So when I did do my undergrad, I wanted to go to Berkeley in Boston. I got in, but I couldn't afford it.
Oh, wow.
I decided to go. Yeah, it was a bummer, but I think it worked out. I'm hoping. So I did end up going to Jacksonville University in Jacksonville, Florida. At the time, they had a really fantastic, and perhaps still do, a really fantastic composition program. And so I went there and studied piano and composition and theory, and then got myself out to LA with like a 7-year gap in there, because I discovered the University of Southern California's graduate program for film scoring and television things and all the rest of it. And I'm just like, I didn't feel like I was good enough to get in. And I don't mean that in a self-deprecating way. I just literally mean that as I wasn't ready for that program when I graduated and did my undergrad. So I took some time to study, taught a lot of piano lessons, did a lot of, smaller, whatever films might have been being made in Jacksonville, Florida at the time. I tried to do them. Came out here finally to, did apply to the University of Southern California's program, graduate program, got in, went to it. My first assistant job, actually my only assistant job, was with Walter Murphy, who writes for Family Guy and American Dad. And I didn't get to write for him, which was totally fine. And it was a part-time thing. I got to do assistant work. I did some orchestration work for him. I got to see how he worked with musicians, live musicians, every single week at the Fox scoring stage. And just, he kind of became a little bit of my mentor in a lot of ways. At the same time, I had also met Blake Neely, who does a lot of also films, but a lot of television, a lot of episodic, and stayed on his radar until one day he said, well, actually, we tried to work together on some things. I became his vocalist. We tried to pitch together on some shows. We wrote some songs together, and then he started a show called Supergirl on the CW, and also started three other shows that year and said, I need to build a team. Would you come and help me design the sound, part of the sound of Supergirl, of that show? And I was sort of tasked with designing the human side of Supergirl, sort of the Clark Kent to the Superman. This was Kara to Supergirl.
That's
And
cool.
yeah, it was really cool. And if you're and all the composers out there who might be listening or getting into this field, that was like the golden ticket. Oftentimes in this field, it's kind of like an apprenticeship. There's many ways to break into the field, but one of the ways is a sort of an apprenticeship, if you will. And so that was kind of what I consider Blake, was a mentor to me. I did, like I said, additional writing for him, and then from there, and again, I still worked on my own projects. He's got a slew of his own projects, but we had several collaborations together. You mentioned The Red Line. We did Batwoman together, Blind Spot, Riverdale. These are all ones that we started together. They started some of them actually started out as his shows and his projects. He was much more further along in his career than I was and still am. And so he brought me in for some of those projects. And then from there, I've just kind of continued building my own repertoire of my own projects. So yeah, that's
And your
kind of
skill
it.
set and your experience and your networking.
100%, totally.
I feel for you. Like moving to Los Angeles is one thing, but then spending like a decade there and just having like people you know that can do certain things and you're reliable, it's just how you do it. And it's just a matter of immersing yourself in that world. So very cool. Let's keep here, tell me more. So then what?
Well, so gosh, I would say that my first solo episodic, I'd had some, again, I had many, smaller projects, but that probably no one was going to hear about, which is totally fine. I think those are still really important. You're cutting your teeth, as you said, you're learning, you're growing, you're figuring out how you want to do things, and you're still, and I always think of it as like working in your league and working above your league or out of your league. So in your league, or I don't want to say levels, if you will, but just again, in your league are the things that, the projects that I'm going to get on my own network, word of mouth, people, hey, I know you, and they're probably going to be the lower budget projects, the ones that are that there's newer filmmakers, newer producers, and so you kind of team up with them, and you. You're getting real scrappy at this point. Like you're doing everything you can, and then if you have the opportunity to work what I call out of your league, in the sense of where I worked for Walter, and I did some writing for Blake, and these are people that are further along in their careers. I'm learning from them. I'm writing at a higher level than I probably would be writing with my own projects, not because I don't want to, just because it's a lot that the time constraints are more demanding, the level is just all around more demanding. And so you're learning again how they're working in their business, and even down to things like organization. How are they organizing their files? How are they, what's their naming convention? How are their rigs kind of set up? I mean, all these things you sort of learn and you adapt and you pull things in that work for you. You're applying it in your league. And then, it's in that, so it's again, it's a learning and growing kind of thing in tandem.
And
So
then
I
you're
did.
passing it on to the people that you are mentorshipping as you go, because you're now hiring people, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So I've got two full-time assistants that I couldn't get by without them. They're amazing, and I've got some people that help me do some additional writing as well, for when I can't handle all of the work, when it kind of comes a little bit. When schedules don't align, or I should say maybe they do align in a way that it becomes a little bit of a train wreck in some ways. So I got so I was working on Blind Spot and Riverdale, and then I got my first studio film, Nancy Drew and the Hidden Staircase, with a really amazing director, Kat Shea. She's wonderful. And just had my first chance to kind of flex a little bit in the studio setting, and it was a really fantastic experience, and just a fun film, and had a great run with that. And then
I have
because
an
of
older
those.
sister, so I know about the Nancy Drew series because she would read them and tell me about them. So I just
Yeah.
thought I'd throw that out there.
No, see, and my
You
mom and
read the
my mom,
Hardy Boys.
yeah, my mom was into the Hardy Boys and a little bit of Nancy Drew as well. So but I kind of grew up on Babysitter's Club, like, the Babysitter's Club books. Well, if you had your sister,
I
she
didn't
would.
read that stuff, but like, and she read Judy Blume and all that stuff. So, I mean, like, there was a lot of that going on. And actually, there's a new movie about her that just came out. I heard it on NPR. So, like, there's a lot of stuff about that. It's very pop culture-y.
It is, and I think we're in this place where we're doing all this like throwback stuff. So, I shouldn't say throwback, but it's like, I think there is a level of nostalgia. I mean, there's a level of recycling that I think we're doing, all the time anyway. Just styles come back in, clothing styles come back and, movie styles, I think, and then, people just love that. I love that, like, nostalgia. I'm all about bringing back the 90s, 80s and 90s. Let's bring it back. It somehow feels like a safer time, which I think, maybe everybody feels that way 20 years earlier. You know what I'm saying? Everyone feels 20 years ago or 30 years ago felt safer, as we get older. It's the same thing. But anyway, so I got my first solo credit episodic show with, technically it was Gremlins, Secrets of the Mogwai, but then I didn't actually work on it and start it until after another show that I got called Kung Fu, which is also on the CW. So that one was a really fun experience. That ran 3 seasons. It just ended officially.
I think I know one of the girls on the Kung Fu show, actually, just randomly from LA. That's interesting.
Olivia, there's Olivia Liang. She's the lead. Shannon Dang.
Shannon. I know Shannon.
Shannon. Oh, she's so great. I got the just the joy of meeting most of the
She's
cast.
like the nicest person you can ever meet.
She is, and they all are. They're just incredible. And
I don't know
I
any
mean,
of those.
obviously as a composer, we're generally not going on to sets and really spending time with actors. And yes, there's occasionally of like, hey, I want to visit the set and just kind of get the vibe and the flow. It helps me research my own process. But generally, composers are not doing that. But
That's what I was
I
wondering, but since you're in LA, you might be, because LA is cool that way.
well, it's true, but they actually film up in Vancouver, so I mean, it's
Right,
crazy.
they do. Yep.
But it's social media. It's the beauty of social media. And I was able to, I just kind of started tweeting at them. And I was like, this is your theme. This is your theme. And they were such a special group. And I did hear that I did actually hear that they were like a really tight-knit group of actors. And it was just a really special production on
Just
their
looks like a
side.
great bunch of people doing it right, and it just looks like a good success story all around. I don't watch really much of that stuff so much. I really haven't had much time for anything. Just
Yeah,
trying
no,
to
I
see.
hear you.
Inside, this is season two, and I was hoping to do season three live, but I think I'm gonna keep it editing it because I like being able to add all the stuff. Like, if there's anything you want to promote, like your website or any other things like that, I'll put them below here. Like, you just tell me to put it below, and then you send it to me later, and we'll put it below.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. No, that's hugely exciting.
So what's exciting you these days anyway? And we'll continue on with your story in order if you want, however you like.
Gosh, I don't even know if it's that interesting anymore. What's exciting me is I will say this, that and anyone who does content like we're doing, where you work so hard in your bubble, but yet nothing, we don't have any control about when something airs, when something is released to the public. And so I feel like I had my head down really hard for like 3 years, and nothing new was really coming out. There were subsequent seasons of Kung Fu and Riverdale, which was really great and very exciting, but in terms of all the other things, so I. As we know, Gremlins, Secrets of the Mogwai, the first season. And I can't wait for people to see the finale of the first season. It's something that I've never worked on a project for such a long time without it being out in the world. And all the animators and the filmmakers said the same thing. They're just like, they've all worked on it for 5 years. I worked on it for three. And it was like, wow. I mean, and animation does take a while, but it was just because of industry mergers. There was all kinds of studio things that were going on that I think they wanted to wait and
Is
then.
there a prerequisite of watching Gremlins to watch the show?
No, I don't believe so. In fact, I think that a lot of parents now who were fans of the original Gremlins are using it to get their kids into Gremlins. But I warn the parents, it's dark. It is. We are not shying away from all of the emotions, and it's the Amblin way. If you think about it, it's the Amblin
And
way.
I just had Pat on, who did the music for Dexter New Blood.
Okay. awesome.
Into it, like, because that's definitely dark. Speaking of dark, that's what made me think.
Yeah. No, seriously, and I love it. I love it. I think it's important. Again, it's the Amblin way to experience all the emotions, not just the mushy, heartfelt, emo type of things, but I mean, fear, guilt, sense of duty, sense of the doing the right thing.
So for the musicians, like myself, I'm a musician, but I'm not a film score composer. Like, I'm like, I'd rather they take my song, how I wrote it, and use it in the show. They can have all the tracks and they can remove the vocals and they can have just the bass going or whatever. That's fine. But I'm not going to change the writing of something for a show unless they're paying me a lot, obviously. But I also, I'm not interested really in scoring something so much. I leave that to you guys. And like my buddy I just saw down at the dock jamming, he's one of the scoring guys in town. It's great to see our friends out playing in the city as well as doing all that all the time. But for those people who want to do that, so it's like, what's a way to really get into that maybe? Any advice for people on if they want to start doing that? Like, so they want to start doing it. They live in Canada. What do they do to start working with real TV producers in Canada and in the US? But like, what are they, where's the beginning point? Because for music supervisors, you have to find their group and submit stuff to them and try to break into that to get music heard. But for film and for composing, where do you start, right?
Yeah, I mean, what's great now is that everywhere they're making film and TV. I mean, Canada especially. I mean, gosh, there's a whole booming thing out there. So that's the good news. I mean, I do think because it's my direction, it's because it's my path. I always say, like, educate yourself. Go to school for it. Now there's programs, and you don't even have to put yourself through like college per se to do it, but there's programs you can take, courses you can take, and when you take them, then you at least you can team up with student filmmakers, and you can team up with those people trying to also tell their stories and break into the field. You can rise together, hopefully. I will say that look, it's easy to say, just get out there and do it. Okay, sure. But I would say, especially for this, and I mean this in an encouraging way, you have to want it. It depends what your definition of success is. If you want to, like, oh yeah, I want to do like Game of Thrones type of stuff. Well, get in line, take a number, get in line. And it's going to take a while, because it takes a while. If you want to do this seriously as a career, it takes a long time. It takes some time, I should say. It takes time to season as a composer. It takes time to see, because I think of it this way. I am first and foremost a composer. I write music. Then I am a film composer. And I feel like those are two different skill sets. I think that the art and the craft of being a film composer is actually different. I'm not saying it's more, better, harder. I'm just saying
you got to tell a story with the songs. If you don't understand that you're doing that, you're not just throwing, like, sure, you can make a killer soundtrack for Donnie Darko by picking great music, but if you know where to put the songs in the movie and how to do them with the shots and have it all planned out, it's such a different vibe.
Well, yeah, I'm not curating, I'm creating. Yeah. You know, so it's like I'm not putting a playlist together to like, oh yeah, or it doesn't sit on the shelf somewhere. Now, we already know that, because, and all of your listeners know that, because we're all making music, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, people will tell you, composers or film composers will tell you that so much of it is not about the music that you're writing. It's about your people skills. It's about your ability to read the room. It's about your ability to take a back seat and take your ego with you to the back seat, you know, and say that we are working towards something different here. This is, you know, it's your ability to interpret, you know, when people say, gosh, this feels too.
So you need to convey emotion with product. Like, you got a client asking you, how can we make this scene really tell this story right? And you're like, well, and you write something that does that, and you can't explain it. You just have to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tricky. It's really tricky. And then your ability to just to say, oh, that didn't work for you. You thought that was funny when clearly I did, you know, it wasn't meant to be funny. If it's funny to them, it's funny.
And it's almost like taking direction as an actor, because you're going to show them what you can do. And then they're going to say, well, do it more like this. And then how you interpret that, what the director or the sound person that's the music supervisor is asking you, right? How do you come back to them with that? Like an actor, do they just change what they're doing in the next scene a different way? You got to watch how you do that stuff with the continuity. And so it's interesting to like compare it to acting in that sense.
It really is. And I always tell like filmmakers when they ever ask like, hey, how is, you know, is there anything helpful, like newer filmmakers, is there anything helpful that we can know about your craft? And I say, you know what? Talk to us like the talent. Talk to us like you would speak to the talent, you know, because one little thing can shut us down too. You know, we're going deep in here and coming out and we're just like actors. It didn't work for you? Cool, try something else. Cool, try something else. You know, this is, it's just, don't take it personally.
A lot of people don't realize how like guys like Harrison Ford or like Al Pacino have been on set and they go like, do it again. They do like 10 times the same scene because they want to get a bunch of different takes that are close enough, but they also want to give the actor like a chance to experiment a little bit here and there. And, you know, you can't always just be completely on script. You have to be ready for that interpretation and taking direction.
Absolutely. So. Totally.
I think really thinking about how you take direction audio wise is interesting. I like that.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky. But again, if people wanting to get into it, educate yourself, do the things, educate yourself as a composer, you know, because these are your tools. So it's like if you, yeah.
Educating yourself. So when you said earlier, the first thing that came to my mind was go to conferences, go to everything you can, because going to school is expensive, but going to a conference is a one-time expense and maybe a trip. And like, I go to NAMM, the NAMM show for musicians in Anaheim as much as I can. And that's how I got endorsed by everybody. I'm endorsed by everyone and I don't have a rocking career yet, you know? So it's because I go to the companies I want, show them what I'm doing. And they go, wow, you're good. You're not famous, but you're good enough that you could go tour and it would work. So like by just meeting the people in the industry, you know, and I was thinking about, for example, I do gaming stuff and I'm like, well, why don't I consider moving into the gaming industry a little bit? What would that take? And there's a thing called BlizzCon and you'd go to that and meet all the people from Blizzard Games and maybe you can write music for games. So like, there's like, go to conferences of the things you do. I'm a search engine. I started as an SEO director in California for the last decade. I would go to something called Webmaster World in Vegas or PubCon every year and speak to people about search engine optimization, YouTube stuff. And now it's all about social media and TikTok. And now it's about AI. So ChatGPT is writing all my social media and SEO posts and optimizing them before we post them. So there you go, right? And so even if you're a writer that doesn't like AI, you can use it for your media. What were you gonna say?
I said that's scary, but I'm trying to figure out ways, like what's the way that it's not gonna like scare me, you know? But maybe something like that.
Do you use it? Mm-mm. Okay, go to chat.openai.com, log in with your Google. That's it. Then be like, hey, give me 10 summaries of this article that I wrote that I can post about on Instagram. And then you just take those summaries and you just put them on Instagram and that's your social media.
Okay, so it can help me with social media. All right, this is good. I like it.
and say you want to do 10 tweets or you want to write a tweet every day for the next 30 days about your upcoming things. Dear ChatGPT, just open ChatGPT and simply write, here are the three things that are my projects I'm working on. Please create 3 weeks of tweets starting Monday to Friday and do some for the weekends as well. And then output it in table format, act as my social expert. Thank you very much. And hit enter and it'll just do it. And if you don't like what it said, do it again, but don't put my name here, but don't put social media handles with this or include these hashtags and it'll just keep doing it for you.
Wow, that's crazy.
It's easy. Like I could do it in another window here for you, but we'll have another talk about that sometime. But feel free to reach out if you want any help on that.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm also, technology is your friend. Like I do some editing for people for video stuff. And this is some advice for my listeners as well. I had a friend who has a bunch of videos they need edited. And we're trying to figure out, well, he's in Texas, I'm in Canada. What's the way to do it? So Dropbox, Google Sheets, make a column. You put the file URLs in one column for Dropbox, just saying these are the unedited raw videos. And then you have another column saying this is where you put the completed videos. And here's a link to the folder. And you literally just have it highlighted in red when it's not done. And then when they're done, you put them green and you just work, you share the doc. One guy's editing it, one guy's inputting the raw videos, and then they can go back and give you comments in there. And you can work offline. Like you're online, but you're not online at the same time.
It's true. And this and it's the same thing with people trying to get involved. It's like this technology. Your technology is totally your friend. And nowadays it's even easier to kind of get into this field. But yeah, listening to podcasts, listening to your podcast, you know, it's like all the different that's how people can educate themselves. And just, and also, as you said before, like FaceTime is really important. People want, like when you meet somebody in person, Because again, when you think
if I was at a conference and ran into you now, I'd know you. And that doesn't mean anything, but it does mean something. You know what I mean? Because I know a lot of people you wouldn't know because they were different. I'm in music more on the rock side, and you're more in the film side. So it's kind of neat.
In terms of like whether you know you're trying to get a job or you're trying to say, hey, I write music and I see that you do films, and you know, if you ever need a composer, I'm here for you. People, you know, people, no one wants to be stuck in the trenches with like a jerk. You know what I'm saying? So like, so when they meet you in person and they see, you know what, I actually totally jive with that person. Let's go grab coffee, or let's talk on the phone, or let's get in, hop on a Zoom. And then then a lot, again, so a lot of relationships build that way. And by the way, they might not even heard your music at this point. They just like you. They just like you.
And what you're saying is so right on the, like, you know, when you meet people, if they like you or not, it's such a good vibe. You're like, oh, I could work with that person. Even if, usually I'll try to work with that person. I want to enjoy working with someone. Like, it's being in the trenches with that person a lot. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, and I started the podcast just like to do more networking, you know, and I can actually like ask the questions that I want to ask for me. I can say, hey, I have a song. I don't want to like write for you, but how do I submit finished songs to supervisors? And then I learned that music supervisors like to be the ones that do the curating. They don't want to be given a song and told what movie to put it in. So you have to meet them and schmooze them and have them just find you. It's sort of weird.
Yeah. And they, I mean, yeah, again, staying on people's radar, staying in people's minds, staying and be like, oh, that, oh, I know that name. Oh, that's cool. Because they'll think of you. And then they'll, when they have a project, so it's like, they have got a project and it's like, oh, I remember that. I remember Sherry, that she did that track. Let me look at it. Oh yeah, there it is. You know, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it's all about staying on people's radar, but not overstepping your bounds. You know, I mean, again, it's like reading the room. Like, you don't want to stalk somebody. You don't want to like annoy them, because
that, right, you meet some people in like a public sort of forum thing, but you're one of the panelists. And then as soon as you're done, you got one person just continuously asking about this problem that they have, that is something they could have solved without you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you're just like,
I'm that not gonna... can't break into the industry because of you now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they shouldn't have badgered the
Well, some people, they just badger everyone at everything the whole time. It's interesting to see those people. And then you see them like 2 years later, they've sort of learned to calm down, but they're still doing it. You're like,
yeah,
man, someday.
I know.
And you're like, am I like doing that too? Do I do this to people?
It's so true. Yeah.
Do you take part in any conferences or do any panels or things like that ever? Have you ever gotten into that side of networking a bit?
Yeah, I mean, I've been on some panels at Comic-Con. I'm actually down at Comic-Con this year. I'm doing two panels on Thursday, July 20th.
That's awesome. I have so many friends that would die to go to Comic-Con, especially from here.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a thing. I don't go to Comic-Con unless I'm on a panel, because it's a lot of people. it's a lot of people, but it's really cool, honestly, when you meet fans, or when you meet, even if it's not fans of like, what, let's say what I've done. I mean, it's very cool to meet fans of stuff of shows that I've worked on. But it's even just so cool to see diehard fans of like anything that I'm like, oh, that costume's hilarious. That's really smart.
I had a cosplay roommate, and she's really good at doing like, what was she doing? What do you call the clown with the pigtails? I forget her name, but.
Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn. Yeah, I had a friend who would do that. And also, so then they'd all come over to our house and get all ready for it and go to Comic-Con. So I'd sort of see it from that angle. And they all had fans. They had all their, because they got hundreds of thousands of Instagram followers and stuff. So it's really funny to see like that happening from another angle. I was in LA for a while. So back in Canada, it's actually so hot here today. It's insane. Our pool's hot, everything's hot. It's hot. It's like LA. But it's,
well, LA, really, gosh, it's only, yeah, we can't, we, I mean, look, I'm gonna enjoy the cooler weather before it gets crazy again. But we've had some pretty cool, like,
yeah, you guys have had I left in 2020 when the pandemic hit in March. I left LA after 13 years, and now I'm back in Canada, and the weather has changed like while I left. Like, apparently LA is not, like, June gloom turned into like massive mudslides and rain or something, and all through January and February. And I'm like, geez, I left and it's better here now.
I know. It's so true.
Everyone's like, you're gonna go back to LA? I'm like, I'm gonna Airbnb for a month, but I'm not moving back there. Forget that. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's something else too. When I came to town and I saw, when I came to LA and I saw the Hollywood sign for the first time, I was just like floored and blown away. And it's kind of my barometer. It's my barometer to say like, if ever I see the sign driving or whatever,
You
and I
don't feel a certain way.
yeah, if I roll my eyes or if I get like an icky feeling, then I'm like, oh, time to go, time to go. But it still holds that magic for me. It's Hollywood. It still holds it. I
I used to
still.
hang out a lot in the in Franklin Village, actually, Beechwood Canyon area. I love that spot. It's so
Yeah,
good.
I just moved out of that area to like Universal Hills area too, so that's
The
pretty cool.
last spot I was at was what do you call it? Like the Hollywood Hills in Sherman Oaks, kind of by
Yeah.
Mulholland Drive, but I was like up just in a bit off Mulholland. It was awesome, and we would go to the Rainbow all the time. And then we'd hit that. You can go one way down the mountain to go to Hollywood, or you can go the other way and go to Ventura Boulevard and have breakfast.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's really great. Yeah, no, it's yeah, LA. If I left, I probably wouldn't. If I left, I'd be done. I think I would be, yeah.
Yeah, well,
100%.
we'll get back there someday. You ever do Burning Man?
No, have not yet.
We run the skateboard camp there, a bunch of our friends. I
Oh.
haven't been in 3 years because of the pandemic, and I'm kind of missing it. But so next weekend, I'm going to the Tottenham, Ontario, Canada Bluegrass Festival,
Nice.
and it's apparently amazing. And
I have family in Ottawa and Ontario. I have dual citizenship actually with Canada, so or
so
Canadian with
Ottawa
dual
is actually
citizenship.
about 4.5 hours from here, but I used to live in Ottawa and work at Nortel way back in the day. So I had a band in Ottawa, and we were one of the biggest bands called Thermocline. We had a video on Much Music and stuff, and we played with like Edwin and some other big bands down there, and we had Matthew Good and stuff back in the day. So we had a fun time in Ottawa. Ottawa was good to me, but the weather sucks, and all the bands always skip Ottawa on their tour. So I was like, I won't skip Ottawa if I ever make it, but because it'll be
That's
too.
awesome.
Barrymore's Music Hall 80 nights. But so back to some, musicians insider stuff, like a little bit more for my audience a little bit. Just if you have any maybe some tips or parting advice for them, like we'll wrap it up soon here, I think. But anything that you think might be helpful, or any just some little tidbits or anything, I'd love to hear them.
I mean, honestly, like, if you're gonna be, if you want to get in the business, just don't be a jerk. Don't be a jerk. This is a service industry. It is. It's a service industry, but it doesn't mean you don't get to have an opinion or a point of view. It just means, you are working with people. You are creating music for, for something else that is not your own, passion project. You can have your passion project, and you should have your passion project, and it's not your TV show or your film. That's their passion project. So it's kind of like, just it's but it's a incredibly fulfilling industry. I feel like it's an incredibly fulfilling job. I especially on Gremlins, I have really felt this way. I'm just like, wow, what amazing people. But yeah, just again, learn your craft, which is writing music, working with instruments, live instruments, working with instrumentalists, working with musicians, working with people. And as well as reading scenes and working with within parameters of what the job is, because the parameters is, I should say, the industry is really all about, the job, I should say, is really all about, there's a lot of parameters, there's a lot of constraints, there's a lot of rules, time constraints, budget constraints. It's not, it's there is work involved. There's art and there's craft, and I would say, learn both. Know it, love it. And if you can imagine yourself being happier doing anything else, go and do that. because I would say the other thing too is that this job is, this career is, there's no destination. It is only about the journey. And you can say that about life in general, of course, but you can't make, winning awards, winning the hardware. You
You
can't
can't
make
chase the one
that.
Grammy.
Yeah, you can't do that. I mean, that's not in your control. There's a lot of things that are certainly in your influence and in your control, but winning awards and having accolades, getting the accolades, even, that's not in your control. So it has to be about the journey.
I really love what you're saying here, and I want to say, like, on top of that, to build on this a little bit, I think it's very, very interesting, like, to think about how advice is like socially is more important than technical or artistic ability in this point. You need to be nice to everyone. and
Yeah.
not fake nice. Be genuinely interested in what people are saying to you, or don't talk to them. And then do the work that you're supposed to do when you're supposed to do it. Learn the parameters, be on time, due diligence, learn other ways to do
Be
it better.
humble. Be humble. I mean, there's always going to be people that have been there before you and are coming after you, who are better than you, who are not as good, who are going to be, all those things. I mean, everyone's all in their different stages. And I say this, it's so funny that I heard it somewhere, but out here in Hollywood, there's no rules, but don't break any of them.
But you
You
gave me an idea of a course we should write together and sell called How to Prepare Yourself for Hollywood. And you just, it's the beginning where it says, just be nice to everyone. We don't care about how good you are at your instrument. Be not learn how to interact with people. Learn how to not just tell them everything you're doing. Keep some secrets up your sleeve where you can play cards later of things you have or names you could drop, but you don't want to. Yeah, you know so and so, or you live with them. Nobody cares unless they ask you about what that person was able to do and if you can get in touch with them first.
Yeah.
Like,
And
don't play your cards too hard.
yeah, and I would say, like, among that, like, being humble, that kind of thing. But also the other thing too is do a really good job with what is in front of you. And 'cause I know it seems so dumb. It seems so silly. Like, I'm just doing this little short indie film or this little commercial, it's on spec, or just this is like a, my neighbor's bar mitzvah's daughter, who I don't know, all whatever, like a home family video or something like that. And just do a good job with whatever you have in front of you, because I'm telling you, people say, oh, it's all in who you know. It's in who you know, but it's about where they're going too. It's like you never know that the conversation that you had with this person's spouse or partner is actually, like, is going to make that film or is going to do that next big project or even a smaller project. Just do a really good job with what's in front of you, because word travels in good ways and bad ways. You know what I'm saying? And it's and again, if it, doing what's in front of you, it's again, you got to do it in stages. What I'm going to do in 5 years, I'm not ready for yet.
So, like, sometimes people will spend a lot of money on a high-end producer because of what they did. And then they come in the room and they don't do anything. They just let the bands do all the work. So, and like sometimes like your reputation can precede you, but if you're not doing the hard work, people will
Doing the
notice
hard
that and they won't hire you again, even if you have done something that blew up, you know? So
Yeah.
even producers and filmmakers and artists that you can like I find the problem with the music industry is when someone tells you you're great and then asks you for money right after. Oh, your music's really good. Come on over here, and it's only 2 grand for this. It's like, wait a minute, this is a sales pitch. This isn't a your music is good. And
Yeah.
I've been told that sometimes. Like, I know my music's good, but it's only good in certain places to certain audiences. Are you that audience? What song did you like? You didn't listen to it. You're trying to sell me something. Like, there's a
I
lot
mean
of.
that, and that's the difficult thing about doing a career in art, in any kind of art, if you're gonna make, like, for gainful employment, because the value of what we do and produce is I mean, there's two different values. There's the value that I place on it because I birthed it, and I'm like, this is good. This is I feel really proud of this. That's the value I've placed on it. But in terms of gainful employment, that value is only what someone else says it is,
And that
what
can
someone
really
else.
devalue or move you up, and it's out of your control once again.
And it can be really disheartening. So you gotta have your stable, and that's what I'm saying. Like know your own worth, but also be aware that your ego's gotta be checked at the door, because it's not really about that. It's just about what that value is for that person and on that project. I mean, there's a lot of really amazing, talented composers, film and television composers out here right now working their butts off. But if they just don't have the project that makes it big, then they, I shouldn't say they, we, if we don't have a project that really, like, stands out, which is getting harder and harder to do since streaming has started. There's just so much content. It's getting harder and harder to have a project that stands out, but I don't have any control over whether that project, lands or flops. I have no control over that.
I'm Aaron Cronus. Cronus, a musician, but I have the Musician's Insider, right? But I'm getting more love from my daily walk guy Snapchat account than I am from my band stuff because I just walk every day and I basically just tell funny stories about what's going on around me. And I'm like,
Yeah.
today's walk's starting up. I don't know yet. We'll see where it ends up because the end of this video could be funny or it could be a surprise or it could be just a boring walk. Guess you have to stick around
Yeah.
and find out.
That's awesome.
I watch, do you use TikTok at all?
I don't. I do not.
Okay, so if you ever start to, I just watched a TikTok webinar today on how to use it, and they're just one of them interesting points from it was not for it to be scripted. Like they don't want it scripted. They want it to be a real, genuine story, not scripted, and use trends where appropriate. So it's kind of interesting. So I like learning like how does it what's gonna be making something viral these days. So that's something I work on a lot, and I'm trying to help my audience understand that I am working to learn how to do that better so I can pass information along to them. And I think little things like knowing don't do scripted TikTok videos is kind of helpful. But
Yeah, that is.
it's weird because I wasn't like they had this little quiz saying do you like asking us what we think is gonna make for TikTok to be better. Like just for example, what I was watching it today and actually filmed the webinar while watching it just so I could watch it back later. And they're showing stuff like 71% of the audience, agrees that this, like, I mean, basically they're saying, what is it that people are following? Is it funny videos? Is it learning videos? Or is it trends? It was trends, and you don't know which one it's going to be until like they're telling you this little thing. But I kind of understood that, like that people are only going to watch things that are entertaining as opposed to funny. Apparently entertaining is the video you want and it has to be non-scripted and just to go viral. What is this the formula everyone's trying to figure out? And if you post every single day, it doesn't mean you're gonna ever go viral either. So it's kind of like being
Right.
consistency isn't gonna reward you unless you're telling a good message that people share. How do you make something that people want to share? So
Yeah.
anyhow, out of that world and back into your world, Carrie Chung, thank you so much for coming and being on
Thank
my
you.
program. If you ever have anything new going on, you want to come back and tell me about it. Maybe season 3, you want to come back and give us a little update of what you've been doing since.
Yeah, I would love to. I just real quick though, I did want to say I do have something that I
Here.
also did based on a true story just came out on Peacock with Kaley Cuoco and Chris Messina and Tom Bateman, based on a true story. So tell your fans to watch it or check it out or something.
That's
And
fun.
then yeah, and then I also have something coming out on Netflix in July, late July, called Happiness for Beginners, which is a really awesome little sort of rom-com with Ellie Kemper and Luke Grimes as well. It's also coming out.
So
So
when you say you have these two coming out, you mean you did the music scoring for them, or there's all of it, or most of it, or part of it? How
I
did?
did all of it. Yes. So based on true. Yes. So I did the. Yeah. I did wrote this. Wrote the music to all of them.
Beautiful. I love meeting people who are doing things in the industry, and it's nice because I'm used to this sort of networking in LA. This is the kind of conversation I might have had somewhere at a networking conference with you or something, and it's like I can still do it now thanks to the technology and the podcast.
Yeah,
So
that's
I'm
awesome.
networking from home.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for having me, Erin. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the banter, the back and forth, the talk. It's really cool.
It's fun. I miss LA, but we'll get out there again and feel free to, post anything you have coming and I'll share it on our socials. Once again, this was Sherry Chung on the Musicians Insider. I'm Cronus. Thanks again for coming. We will see you all on the next episode.